You're with Nadia Mitsopoulos, ABC Radio Perth.
Good morning and welcome to Focus. I hope you had a good weekend. It's not hard to find a $5 bottle of wine these days, and I've never bought one because I suspect it probably won't taste very nice. But have you? And tell me honestly why. Is it the bargain price or is it an incentive to drink more? Back in March, the state government held a preventive health summit, which explored ideas to reduce and prevent obesity and alcohol-related harm. And I was there for the entire session on alcohol. And the room was full of representatives from health organisations, and they all supported introducing a minimum floor price for alcohol. It was high on the agenda. And the thinking is that getting rid of cheap alcohol will reduce harmful drinking levels. Now, the health minister made a strong case for a floor price last year, but since his summit, he's been silent, and I sense there won't be any action on this anytime soon. So what are the pros and the cons of such a move? Today on Focus, we're looking at the price of alcohol.
Focus Perth with Nadia Mitsopoulos on ABC Radio Perth.
And on the panel we have Julia Stafford. She's the Executive Officer at the McCusker Centre for Action on Alcohol and Youth, and from the Australian Hotels Association, the WA CEO, Bradley Woods. Would paying more make you drink less? Is hitting the hip pocket the best way to reduce harmful drinking? Julia Stafford, if I can start with you, how cheap has alcohol become?
Hey, good morning, Nadia. Some alcohol products are sold extremely cheaply. Overall, alcohol has become more affordable over time. It hasn't kept up with, the prices of alcohol haven't kept up with wage rises. So some products are extremely cheap, particularly cheap wine, your bulk cask wine, some of the very, very cheap, cheaply produced bottled wines, particularly from the bottle shops. The big major chains of liquor retailers are able to heavily discount some of their products, sell some of them as loss leaders, so really quite ridiculously cheap. But not all products are very cheap. There's a whole range, but we're certainly seeing quite a lot of heavily promoted, heavily discounted products.
And is that the problem? So I look at this ad, and this is advertising Clean Skins at $3.99, you buy by the dozen. Mm-hmm. Is that the problem when you talk about cheap alcohol? This is what worries you the most?
So in terms of the harms from cheap alcohol, it's the products that are designed, produced, promoted to be the cheapest in their categories that are really targeting the heavy drinkers who are really looking for the dirt cheap products.
And that's the result of what? More competition, basically.
Well, I think it's a result of a whole heap of factors, but we have seen in Western Australia a rise in the discount-focused bulk buying liquor stores that have really changed the market.
Does that, Bradley Woods, worry you? Is this too cheap?
Well, there's a point where alcohol becomes far too cheap, Nadia, particularly when we see it for the same price of water or sometimes less. For the manufacturers, for the wine growers, it doesn't make any sense. They're obviously dumping juice into the market because they can't sell it at a reasonable price. As Julia talked about, there's been a massive impact of the large, very large, big box type supermarket chain liquor stores that have had an impact on the retail sector. And what it's done is it's delivered a lot more cheaper alcohol into the community and into the market in situations where it probably has had a negative impact. And we warned previous governments of this when they deregulated the liquor store licences in the mid-2000s and that this would come. Luckily, the McGowan government has reversed that in the last couple of months, and there's been some more restrictions and some proper evaluation on new liquor store licences that'll be considered as part of the liquor licensing regime. So 10 years on, it's been, well, 12 years on, it's been improved. But along the way, there's thousands, tens of thousands of more trading hours for liquor stores, and there's hundreds more liquor store licences. And that's put a huge amount of pressure on the industry.
And does that also impact on the people that you represent, which is hotels?
Of course.
And they have liquor stores attached to them, but I don't see them selling at this price because they can't afford to.
Well, they can't afford to, and in the main, they don't get access to products at the same price. They don't have the buying power that large supermarket chains do, so they focus on higher quality and smaller quantities. Look, some will, and there's no doubt that some hotel bottle shops will have access to that market, but at the end of the day, it's not in our interest for people to be fed really cheap alcohol. We'd actually rather them on-premise, consuming under proper level of service, where we're employing more people and we're adding value to the equation of the purchase. And hopefully they're also eating at the same time, and it's in an environment that people aren't sitting at home by themselves drinking on their own.
And do you buy that argument, Julia?
Absolutely. I mean, when you talk about cheap alcohol, you're not talking about the alcohol from restaurants and bars and pubs. You know, they're not particularly cheap often, and there's a massive price difference between what you pay at an on-premise, you know, restaurant, bar, pub, versus what you'd buy from one of the major liquor retailers.
Okay, so how does a minimum floor price work?
So it would work by setting a minimum that you could sell a standard drink for. So, you know, each alcohol product, a bottle of wine, has about, say, 7 standard drinks. So if you have a minimum price of $1.30, like they do in the Northern Territory, then that bottle of wine couldn't be sold for less than $9.10.
And that, so would it apply to, it wouldn't apply to all alcohol products though, would it?
It would apply to all alcohol products, absolutely.
But would it catch all alcohol products?
So most alcohol products would already be sold above that threshold price, but it would mean that a retailer couldn't sell a product below that minimum floor price per standard drink.
So it would then capture these sort of $4 or $5 bottles of wine, cask wine. Would that capture?
If we look at the Northern Territory model, where it started on the 1st of October, a 4-litre cask wine that might have been $18 or $20 will now be around $50, $55 because of that minimum unit pricing. So for cask wine, it's gone up a lot. For beer, it's probably gone up by $20 or $30 a carton. For mid-strength, it's gone up double the price. And for spirits, not as much, but probably about, from, say, the figures I've got, sort of about $15 to around $32. So it just depends on the product.
Is that your calculation?
Well, I don't think that beer and spirits would be particularly affected at all by a minimum floor price at a reasonable level. I'm not quite sure where those figures are from, but I don't think you'd see your standard kind of well-promoted beer brands and spirits brands going up at all.
So how do you come to that? Because, first of all, the Northern Territory, oh, let's get to it now, theirs is
$1.30.
Okay. And then when I read the case for a minimum floor price for alcohol, and that's by the Alcohol and Youth Action Coalition, it says that it calculates it would only capture the cheap wine, cask wine and some cheap beer. It says spirits and certain things wouldn't be affected by this.
It just depends on the number of standard unit drinks in any container or any vessel. So if you've got a case of beer or a carton of beer, it's the number of units that are in that carton. It comes down to in the same as with a cask wine container as well. And it's just a question of maths and arithmetic in terms across the number of standard drinks. My figures here are just back of the envelope calculations. But what I do know in terms of the beer, but in terms of the wine, I think we'd all agree that the cask wine price is up around the 50-55 as a result of the $1.30 in the Northern Territory, is that right?
I think cask wine would be particularly affected because it is sold at such ridiculously cheap prices currently. So they're absurdly cheap prices. You can buy cask wine for about 24 cents per standard drink currently from those major chains. So absolutely that would be affected. And so I think people would steer away from those kinds of bulk discount wines. But if you look at the highly promoted, well-recognised brands of cartons of beer, of spirits, of ciders, they're already above that kind of threshold price.
Because the examples that you've given us, Bradley, they're huge increases.
Yeah, and Nadia, just to correct, actually, I've read the wrong column. The pricing is as you've indicated. Yep. It would take beer in terms of a case of 24 up to around $44. So
currently from around,
just depends on what it is. I'm talking about a standard, run of the mill product that could be 40, it could be 35, it could be 45. Yep. It just depends. I mean, the issue, and I'm not wanting to debate it because I don't disagree with it, that beer is probably the least impacted, and I'm not questioning that. It's just the issue is really around cask wine in terms of ramping up that price. The product that's probably least likely to be impacted initially, on the figures that I've seen, is going to be spirits and beer. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I think the question is, what are the products that are likely to be relevant in the context of alcohol-related harm, and what are the other factors that are associated with this as well? I think just looking at minimum unit pricing on its own is a bit naive, because there's so many other variable factors that impact on alcohol, alcoholism, on abuse of alcohol, and what are the factors that go towards people becoming addicted in that sense because of a price-related impact.
And we will look at that, absolutely. But if I can just quickly, a few more questions on a minimum floor price. What price would you recommend? What would you like?
Well, I think we need to see some modelling, data modelling using Western Australian data to really help us identify the most appropriate minimum price that would help to reduce the drinking and reduce the harms, particularly among the heaviest drinkers, while having very little, if any, effect on light and moderate drinkers. So, we're talking about, you say, with the Northern Territory, they've chosen $1.30, so that gives us something to kind of talk about. But in terms of what might be the right price, the appropriate price for Western Australia, I think we need to see the modelling to make sure it's having the intended impact of reducing the drinking and harms among the heaviest drinkers while really having minimal impact on moderate drinkers.
And the challenge with that, of course, is that those that are most likely to be chronic consumers and addicts rarely shift. Their elasticity around alcohol consumption is very minimal in relation to price. They tend to stick to it regardless of price changes. And I think tobacco in price increases are an example of that. Over the years, there's been massive, massive increases on taxation on tobacco.
And smoking rates have decreased.
They have, but there's still a core that stick to it. And what I'm talking about is those that are hard locked onto the product. And those require other strategies, and they require other interventions, and they can't be looking at MUP just on its own. There's no doubt, though, that if, young kids are going out, 18, 19-year-olds, and they're picking up a cask wine, 4-litre cask wine, and they're using that as their product of choice to sort of focus on getting drunk as opposed to enjoying themselves in another way, then it's probably contributing to excessive consumption.
Would you be okay with a floor price?
Well, we've looked at it and said we're open to examining it. We're not championing for it, but we're willing to talk to government about it.
You're not necessarily supporting it, but you're happy to have a discussion about it?
Correct,
which is what
we're absolutely.
Doing
we think we should be. We should be mature enough as an industry to open to listen to the rational arguments. And at the end of the day, we don't want our consumers to be alcoholics. We don't want them to be chronically harmed by their consumption pattern. I'm a father. I'm a parent as well, and I've got kids, and I have friends and others in the community as well that I don't want to see them abusing alcohol in a negative way. It's such a great product to use from a social positive context, in celebrations or just socialisation with friends. Let's not let it become something that's a negative as well.
You are listening to Focus. We are talking this morning about a minimum floor price for alcohol. We're having the discussion. It's a fairly new discussion in WA. The pros and cons, and we'd love to hear from you, 1300 222 720, or you can send a text on 0437 922 720 in the studio. Julia Stafford, she's from the McCusker Centre for Action on Alcohol and Youth, and Bradley Woods, he's the CEO of the Australian Hotels Association here in WA. And already some texts coming through, I expected. Not everybody likes it. Bill says, putting the price up on anything simply makes poor people poorer. This one, Nadia, we're not all alcoholics, so it's only the well-off who can enjoy a bottle of wine, and I have had a great glass of bargain wine. Thank you and cheers. John says, 1 litre of gin in Australia is $50 to $60. In the UK and Europe, it's about £12 to £15. I'm not sure we have cheap alcohol here, John. We do, if you like to drink a bottle of wine at $3 or $4 or $5, but it is available and it's a lot of it around. Jay says, the wrong people are being hit. If you observe the customers in a liquor store, the young binge drinkers buy hundreds of dollars worth of spirits. Many pensioners are buying the cheapest stuff. And Sebastian says, alcohol tax. It's just another tax on the poor. It won't stop the rich who can afford it. I can't afford to have a drink at a restaurant or a pub, so don't tax me as a health measure. It's not a tax. I just got to make that clear too, because a tax goes to government. This gets passed on to a consumer, the retailer makes the money on the extra. Is that correct, how it works?
Yeah, the MUP operates not as a tax, but it's a mandated, regulated minimum standard.
So the extra money gets passed on to the consumer and absorbed by the retailer.
Well, it's retained in the network. I think the points that your callers or your people have written in this morning have certainly indicated is that one of the biggest challenges is that the average pensioner who buys a carton of cask wine, consumes it over 2 or 3 weeks, has 1 or 2 glasses a night because that's all they can afford, would be hit the hardest with this.
I mean, I think it's important to understand that for light and moderate drinkers, based on all the research from minimum pricing around the world, light and moderate drinkers are hardly impacted at all. If you don't drink much, you wouldn't be seeing much impact on your wallet. This is a measure targeted towards reducing the drinking and the harms amongst the heaviest drinkers. And all the research on minimum prices really shows that it's only going to impact the heaviest drinkers drinking, and those people are responsive to price. So just to pick up Bradley's earlier point about whether heavy drinkers are responsive to price, there's lots of research showing that they are. The whole population is responsive to price. As prices increase, drinking reduces, and that includes among the heaviest drinkers, and that's what minimum pricing is all about.
There's merit in that.
Yeah, but I look at it a little bit more deeply, I suppose. If someone isn't addicted to a product, there's a lot more required to stop that addiction and the cycle of addiction than just simply changing the price. Intervention's needed at a whole range of levels.
Hi, Daryl.
How are you going, Nadia?
Yeah, well, thanks. What did you want to say?
I was going to say, according to the National Drug and Alcohol Research Centre, the use of alcohol in teenagers, heavy drinkers, etc., is already in decline. There is no excuse to add an alcohol floor when statistically the studies that I've indicated shows even Australia in comparison to 20 out of 28 countries in the world, we have a decline in use. We don't need a floor to make an extra decline. So why are 99% of the population group being punished for the 1% of heavy users that they still indicate is in decline? I don't agree with the alcohol tax. If you can't prove the statistics, I actually agree with all the research because they don't. And that's the government studies and the government population, the government research centre. And they're saying otherwise.
Is this issue, though, Daryl, is more about harmful drinking? I mean, what studies...
No, that's irrelevant because harmful drinking of one person shouldn't punish the other 19 people out of the 20. Those people who are doing harmful things, that's because they've got their own issues existing. Alcohol is their management technique. That's the problem. You can't punish the rest of the population. I'm saying if statistics said it was in the increase, not had been halved since 2013 amongst teenagers, not have been in decline since 2013, your argument might be valid. But because it's in the decrease already without a minimum floor, you can't stand there and say we need a minimum floor to stop drinking when statistically it's already in the decline.
Daryl, thank you. And there will be a lot of people out there who agree with Daryl.
Mm. He's right, though. The alcohol consumption across the board has been decreasing per head of population, and that's consistent over the last 4 or 5 years.
And it's wonderful to see reductions in drinking across the population. We still have a really long way to go in terms of reducing the harms from alcohol. If you look at hospitalisations, emergency department presentations, road crashes, domestic violence involving alcohol, these figures aren't going down. We still have a massive problem. So while top line figures are showing reduced drinking and including among young people, which is excellent, we still have a really long way to go in terms of reducing those expensive, tragic impacts of alcohol that many in the community do experience and that affect more than just the drinker.
What are the harmful drinking levels then? Those that drink, say, above the national average in WA, I think, and I'm frantically trying to find it, is around 26%.
Yeah, about the...
Which is above the national average.
Yes, and in Western Australia, we drink at risky levels above the national average. So we do have a particular problem with alcohol in Western Australia, where more people drink above the low-risk drinking guidelines in Western Australia than nationally. And we've seen for a long time that the population average of drinking is higher in Western Australia than the average for Australia. So we do have particular problems, and so our police and our doctors, nurses, they're really seeing the impacts every day.
On Daryl's point, though, he still feels that the majority are being punished for a minority.
And that would be correct, is that there's always been the situation where the highlights that are made around the problematic consumption, the antisocial behaviour, are used as the spearhead to put more restrictions and controls on everyone else. And we've seen that, and in the hotel industry, the bar industry has had to adopt a whole range of other restrictions and regulations over time to I suppose, meet those concerns that government have had. Sometimes they're fair, sometimes they're very unfair.
Scott wants to respond to Daryl. Scott, hello.
Hello, how are you going?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Daryl's kind of grumpy comments, I think he had two of them. The first was that it's in decline, so we should forget about it. Well, there's all kinds of good, bad stuff that's in decline. We shouldn't be happy with the level of decline. We should have a conversation about it. And on the question of one person inflicting punishment on the other 99% of people, that's the world today. We already live there. We have to pay for these people's medical care. We have to pay their taxes. There's a whole bunch of impacts on the justice system, impacts socially. People are drinking and abusing their relatives, or, you know, there are negative impacts. And there are also positive impacts. I don't disagree with that. But the point is, we're already suffering for the problematic drinking of some people. We should choose to suffer in a way that is structured and sensible and fixes the problem.
So in regard to a floor price, what's your position, Scott?
I'm broadly supportive. I do accept that it punishes poor people more than it punishes more wealthy people, but the research says that it works on things like cigarettes, on things like in other countries, sugary drinks. We know that this actually works. To increase pricing, it does reduce consumerism.
And everyone has to consume less of it because everyone's paying a lot more for it as a result. It's like any tax increase or any minimum standard increase, everyone will be spending more.
But that's not a bad thing. No, having less of it is not a bad thing when we're talking about cigarettes and sugary drinks.
If you're at an abusive end of it, if you're a moderate consumer and you're paying more for a small luxury in life, that's unreasonable.
And you wouldn't...
No moderate consumption of cigarettes. But
I'm not talking about cigarettes. Sorry, I was talking about sugar products. Yeah.
Sure, but my point is that we are paying regardless. Society must pay either way, right? And I think we should seize control of it and pay in a way that we're happy with.
Well, it's the taxpayers who are paying for it, remember? Those who are not paying tax are not paying for that public health and that public service. So
they still have to live in society, which is harmed by problematic drinking.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, government money is public tax-paying money, and that's a result of people paying more taxes. The point here is that minimum unit pricing will have an impact across the entire board of spectrum of society for those who either are problem drinkers or not problem drinkers. Everyone will pay more.
I just don't agree with that point. The majority of products are already priced above that minimum threshold. Say if we look at $1.30, the majority of products are already sold above that price. So I absolutely disagree with Bradley's point that everybody will pay more. It's not the case.
The product that is most impacted, or the products that are most impacted, say cask wine, there's a lot of consumers of cask wine that are simply moderate consumers. They might have one glass a night or one and a half glasses a night over a four-week period, and they do consume it over a long period of time. They will pay 4 to 5 times more for their four-litre cask of wine.
Scott, thank you very much for that. Let's go to Barry. Hi, Barry.
I'd just like to say I agree with everything Daryl said. I'd also like to say that putting the profits back in the bottle shop will make them more profitable. So we'll probably get more of them. I mean, the whole thing is we're grown-ups. We should be allowed. I'm a pensioner. I have great pleasure in finding a cheap bottle of wine. And I bring it home and I chat to my wife. We have a taste and we decide if it's good or bad. But if it's bad, we won't buy it again. And if it's good, we will. But, I mean, a cheap bottle of wine. What's wrong with a cheap bottle of wine, for Christ's sake? This is stupid.
Barry, thank you very much. These issues really get people fired up. 1-300-222-720 is the number. John, hello.
Hi. Yes, I was just saying that on the figures that you were talking about, The two things happen. Firstly, it hugely increases the profit margins for the liquor retailers.
Sorry, you're talking about the figures of what a floor price would be?
Price, right. Yeah, because it's not a tax, it goes to the retailer.
That's right.
So, and then on the subject of a cask of wine, on the figures that were presented there, that would push the price of a cask of wine up to about the same level as a bottle of scotch or a bottle of vodka. And I imagine that which would contain about the same number of standard drinks as a cask of wine. So all that will happen is that faced with, well, shall I buy a cask of cheap, not very pleasant wine, or I'll buy a bottle of vodka or a bottle of scotch? It's not going to reduce the alcohol use.
John, thank you.
I mean, I think we've seen research from around the world, particularly the natural experiments in Canada where they've had minimum pricing, which shows that it's the heaviest drinkers and only the heavier drinkers that are affected by a minimum price. If you don't drink much, if you don't buy much, you're hardly going to be impacted by a minimum price. And you probably switch to something, you know, slightly better quality. So the issue with cask wine is really only because the Australian tax system has taxed wine in a way that makes absolutely no sense. That's why a minimum price would have an impact on cask wine, but hardly
because
any of the main products.
That, you're talking about the equalisation tax on wine, which looks at which taxes on a wholesale price rather than the volume of alcohol.
Yeah, so wine's taxed differently to other forms of alcohol. That's why the cheap wine is so cheap, because it's taxed based on its price, and so a cheap bulk wine is hardly paying any tax. So we've got this anomaly in the Australian tax system. So that's really what we need to fix, and a minimum price would go some way to doing that at a state level, while we haven't seen any movement on that at a federal level.
And Nadia, I think this illustrates why taxation and why price is not the answer to solving these problems, because there's one group of consumers who are enjoying cask wine that drink moderately, drink it responsibly, and can't afford anything more expensive. And there's another group that buy it because it is cheap and in bulk. And by using this taxation or pricing mechanism as a way of intervening in their consumption or their behaviours isn't going to solve the problem, because there's so much diversion between the two groups. There's other ways of intervening and supporting the abuse of alcohol.
Bradley, I've had a couple of people on the text asking you to clarify your position. You were saying that you're not championing this floor price. You're happy to have a discussion about it, but the more I talk to you, the more I sense that you are opposing it.
Well, we have concerns that by just applying it as a broad principle, it's not going to solve everything. It has to be considered as part of a whole mix of interventions and issues.
So just doing this on its own is not what you would want to see.
Not at all. And the state government's looking at things like banned drinkers' registers up in the north, self-imposed restrictions, licensees having restrictions placed on them under Section 64 hearings, prohibition orders that target individuals who have got recidivist behaviours that are causing problems in the community. These are issues that have got to be considered in conjunction with any price change or any minimum unit pricing issue as well. And some of those strategies are far more targeted and far more beneficial.
Nadia Mitsopoulos on ABC Radio Perth and on the ABC Listen app.
In the studio this morning, talking about a minimum price for alcohol, is Julia Stafford, Executive Officer at the McCusker Centre for Action on Alcohol and Youth, and Bradley Woods. He's the CEO of the Australian Hotels Association. Vinny says, I don't mind paying an all-alcohol tax if it goes to hospitals, but not in the pocket of business people. It's an absurd idea, and I don't believe I'm listening to this. Well, you are, and this is the discussion that we're going to be having for quite some time, I imagine, over the next few years. Linda says, I do not agree with a minimum price. I drink a few times a year, not cask, and I quite like my cheap wine because I drink sweet wine that not many people like. I would rather people be on a register that stops problem drinkers buying alcohol. Linda, thank you. And we can touch more on that. You mentioned that earlier, Bradley. Jay says, I've just come back from France where the supermarket prices for very good wine makes our retailers look expensive, and you don't see drunks in the street there. Michael says, we need this change now. If Daryl was to visit an ED, he would see the damage that is out there. Affluent people abuse alcohol as well. And Pierce says, as a moderate drinker, I am being penalised by heavy drinkers. My taxes are supporting our health system. My health and car insurance premiums cover those that consume too much. My council rates pay for street cleanups. A minimum price is a fair measure that research shows will reduce alcohol consumption among heavy drinkers. I'll get to some more of your texts. We'll talk about research as well. We talked a bit about how much we're drinking, and Julie, you touched on the fact that we are above the national average. What about when you look at young people, when you look at Aboriginal communities, regional communities? What are the harmful levels there?
Yeah, so with young people's drinking, we've seen that more young people are choosing not to drink, and those who are drinking a bit less than they used to, which is excellent news. If you dig a little bit deeper, you see that some of their mates are making up for it. There's still a substantial proportion of very heavy drinking young people. We know that they are particularly sensitive to price, and they look for the cheapest products. So the heaviest drinking young people are looking at buying the very cheap products that we're talking about, which is contributing to the harms that they face. When you look at the national surveys, you see that it's the younger groups who are more likely to be drinking at the really, really high levels. So we're still a long way to go with young people's drinking, as well as across the community.
Indigenous communities too?
So when you look at Indigenous populations, they're more likely not to drink, but those who do drink are more likely to drink at riskier levels. So, you know, there's a bit of, two things going on
and
there.
And it's important to make that distinction too.
Absolutely, absolutely. And when you look at the lowest income groups, they're more likely not to drink at all. So when you, I mean, obviously the concerns come up about how low income groups would be impacted by changes to the prices, which is a very fair thing to look at. They're actually the most likely not to drink and experience the most harms from alcohol. They're the most at risk. The lowest income groups are the most at risk of experiencing all sorts of harms from alcohol. So reducing drinking amongst those lower income groups, they actually have the most to gain.
I was reading some research on the cost and of harmful drinking, and the estimate is about $3.1 billion. That covers policing costs, hospitalisations, road crashes and ambulances. And the trend has been, my understanding is that has increased over time.
Yes, responding to harms from alcohol is extremely expensive. We all pay for that through our taxes and all sorts of other areas like the text identified. We pay for it through our insurance, through our council rates, all of these other areas that we're paying for it, as well as we're experiencing the harms caused by other people's drinking through domestic violence, through fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, through road crashes. So reducing the drinking across the population will reduce our risk of being in an accident with a drink driver, will reduce our risks of all sorts of harms from alcohol.
I'd like to go to Dr. Sudhakar Rao. He's chair of the Trauma Committee for the Royal Australian College of Surgeons in WA. He's also head of state trauma. He's a surgeon. He sees a lot of this firsthand. Dr. Rao, good morning.
Morning, Nadia.
A snapshot survey of 100 emergency departments around Australia at 2 a.m. on the 16th of December last year found one in five ED patients were there because of alcohol. Is that high?
Yeah, yes, it is high, but let me say that is also an underestimate. If you read the article properly, that says this is a minimum. It's an absolute minimum. There is a higher level of alcohol consumption that doesn't come through in that.
What do you see?
So I'm going to talk to you about trauma, and I'm going to talk to you about other diseases as well. So the trauma and alcohol relationship is really, really tight. It's very close. It's a very common cause of trauma. It's a very common cause of domestic violence. One in three fatalities on the road, one in three, has alcohol as a relationship. The corresponding numbers with alcohol and road fatalities affects the same age group. So the age group from 15 to 30, 35, the really vulnerable, and I really love Brad to listen carefully, these are the vulnerable people. That's when they get hooked on alcohol, is when alcohol is freely available, easily available to young people. There's such a tight correlation between alcohol, road fatalities, and road injuries. can I switch to domestic violence or intimate partner violence? The association between alcohol and other drugs, I'll have to add other drugs. Alcohol is a drug. Let's not cover it up in any other sugar-coated way. Alcohol is a drug, and the relationship between drugs and domestic violence is incredibly tight, as is other interpersonal violence. The one-hit punch, the coward punch, it's all alcohol-driven.
And then you look at long-term issues, liver failure,
cancer. Long-term issues, so I happen to have a different role. I'm also a liver surgeon. And the number of people that I see with alcohol-induced cirrhosis is incredibly high. And when I hear about people say, oh, we should have the European style of drinking, some of the biggest studies on alcohol-related diseases and liver disease actually come from Spain and Italy. They have a huge problem with alcohol. So let's just go through alcohol. The chronic drinkers, the people that drink lots and lots in high volume, affect their brain. The brain shrivels up. They lose their ability to think. They lose their ability to even walk. It affects the liver, affects pancreas, something called pancreatitis, a severe illness. We lose at least 20 people a year in rural Perth alone from pancreatitis. Affects the heart as well. And then there's a whole list of cancers that result as a that occur as a result of alcohol. Can I say the debate I've been listening to reminds me of the birthday cake and GST? It's been brought down and it's been really, really well managed by the hotel industry and Mr. Whitstay. We're talking about details. Let's get to the point. Is alcohol safe? Absolutely not. There is a new study out published in the British Medical Journal and The Lancet, very reputable journals, which say there is no safe limit of alcohol. So when you ask Julie about risk-taking levels of risky drinking, well, actually, once you start drinking, you are taking a certain amount of risk. It's a question of whether it's high risk or low risk. So there is no safe limit for alcohol. Is alcohol bad? Absolutely. We need to protect our young. We need to protect them early. We know that the brain does not mature till 23. I hope Brad's really listening to this carefully. He said he's got children. I've got children. The brain does not mature till 23 years old. We have a legal age limit of 18, unfortunately. We're not going to change that. But you have to protect the young and the vulnerable from alcohol. Alcohol's been around for centuries. We're not going to fix it with one piece of legislation. Brad, you're absolutely right. We have to work on it slowly, bit by bit, and this is part of the building block. You're happy to look at other bits, but you need to look at this as well.
How quickly would the college like a minimum floor price to be introduced? I mean, what level of urgency do you give this piece of legislation?
We would have liked it introduced in October before Northern Territory did. And I have to ask, if Northern Territory is doing it, why not WA? If Canada's doing it, why not WA? What's different about WA people? Do we have bulletproof livers? Do we have bulletproof brains? Do we have bulletproof pancreases? We don't. We're the same. We're the same vulnerable organism. If it works in other parts of the world, it's going to work here. And I think the debate's been so cleverly managed that people think it's going to affect everyone. It's not. This is the people that buy the $4 bottles of wine. So the Darrells of the world who rang in, if you're drinking that kind of alcohol, you really, really should be talking to your doctor anyway. So the people that are getting upset, it's like that whole birthday cake and GST thing. It's just been completely twisted around. The people that are drinking small amounts of good quality wine shouldn't worry about this. It's not going to affect them. I'm sure Julie will explain this better.
Dr. Sudhakar Rao, I really appreciate you being part of the program this morning. I'll be very interested in hearing a response from Bradley Woods. But Dr. Rao, thank you very much. Bradley?
Which part, Nadia? I apparently have no knowledge of these things, according to the good doctor, and I need to be lectured. But is there a particular point that he made that you'd like me to respond to?
Well,
I'm very well aware of the dangers of adolescent consumption of alcohol, of excessive consumption, about frontal lobe development and the issues associated with that in terms of long-term damage. As a parent, I am not ignorant to these things, and I think it's a bit hypocritical for some people to assume that just because I'm representing a particular cause that I don't have personal views on this as well. And I think it's a bit offensive. But anyway, put that aside. The reality is that there is no question in our mind that alcohol is a drug and it needs to be regulated and it needs to be sold responsibly. We've never backed away from that. So when there's been all this debate in the community around, you know, putting a liquor store on every single shop corner and having alcohol available 24/7, we've always tried to have a responsible consumption around that, a responsible debate around that issue and about the responsible consumption of alcohol. The AHA wrote the Responsible Service of Alcohol training courses in the 1990s. We developed the national module. We've championed it for years. We've driven it. We've personally trained hundreds of thousands of people in that area. We understand it. It's not something we shy away from. And I do understand that there's trauma involved in excessive consumption. But for the doctor to say that every one punch hit is all alcohol driven is just clearly factually wrong, particularly when we look at some of these high profile cases out of Sydney.
So you argue drugs are involved?
Well, there was drugs involved and there was no alcohol consumed by a particular couple of those incidences. And that's proven. It's in the media, it's in the coronial inquests. These are issues that are factual. But the majority
you could argue would be
alcohol.
Oh,
no question. And Danny Green has done an amazing job of raising people's awareness around this issue. It's more than just alcohol consumption, though. It's about behaviour and the thought that a young man can just punch another guy in the head for no reason at all. And it's unfair to say that all one punch situations are a result of just alcohol alone. It's a combination of factors.
I don't think that's the point that Dr. Rao was making. I think that he was saying that we need to recognise the role of alcohol in assaults, in domestic violence. A lot of that happens behind closed doors.
And we do.
And it's not the glamorous side. It's not the nice side that we like to think about with alcohol. But that's why it's so important to hear from the frontline, medical, police, and other people who are dealing with the side of alcohol that isn't nice, the uncomfortable truths that, you know, some of those issues are your immediate effects of intoxication, where our ambulances are, you know, 15 ambulances in WA per day called out to treat alcohol intoxication. So really tip of the iceberg. Police call-outs, so many of them are to do with alcohol and they leave lasting effects on our frontline workers. Traumatic incidences that they need to deal with every day. Anything that we can do to reduce that is worth considering. And so a minimum price as part of a comprehensive approach is a modest measure that would make a difference.
I'm going to go to David, and then I've got a couple of more questions before we finish up. David, hello.
Hello. A lot of this debate has sort of come down to, I guess, the nanny state argument. But I think my view is that one of the roles of government is to sort of protect us from ourselves. That's why I can't drive a car without having a licence, for example, and why I have to have insurance for it. But I think the other point as well, with respect to responsible service of alcohol, I guess the question is... going to be terribly inflammatory wording, but is it really right to have responsible service of alcohol to be the responsibility of an industry which profits from irresponsible consumption of alcohol?
But we don't profit from irresponsible consumption. We profit from responsible consumption. That's the point I'm making.
But it is responsible and irresponsible consumption because, I mean, binge drinkers, they're still buying large amounts of alcohol. That's still large. I do understand. I'm certainly not trying to lay the blame entirely at the industry's feet, but it's certainly I don't think it's necessarily true that they only profit from responsible consumption.
Oh, I agree entirely. Look, there's no question there's a responsibility here that retailers and manufacturers have, and we shouldn't shy away from it. That's why I'm here today, and I've never shied away from talking to the media about these issues because we do have a responsibility as a community player and as a corporate citizen in the community to address these issues and, where appropriate, intervene and put in better practices.
David, thank you very much for your call. Just want to look at the experience in Canada. So it's had a minimum floor price since the 1990s, and Bradley, you inform me that it was more about a profit, a tax issue rather than a health issue.
Initially, yeah.
Initially. Russia has it, Ukraine has it, Uzbekistan, Wales has passed legislation for a minimum floor price. Scotland introduced one in May. Ireland is considering it. It is becoming a popular measure. What is the experience What evidence do you have, Julia, about the difference it has made?
Yeah, well, Canada's a great example where, as you said, they've had minimum prices for quite a long time. So there's been lots of research to evaluate what impact that has had. And so when in Canada, when they've increased the minimum price by about 10%, they've found that consumption has reduced by about 5%, and you've seen reductions in hospitalizations, in road crashes due to alcohol, in policing incidents. So when they've increased the price of alcohol just modestly, they've found significant reductions in a whole range of harm indicators and in consumption generally. So really great experience that a lot of other governments are now paying attention to. A lot of health groups, community groups around the world have really paid attention to this. And so that's why we're seeing this momentum building. As you say, it's been adopted in quite a number of places, and we're just seeing that interest growing for governments who want a measure that would cost the government little, very little to implement, that would have a big impact on reducing the drinking among the heaviest drinkers. So a very targeted approach to reducing the harms from alcohol. This is well worth considering, and that's why we want to talk about it for Western Australia.
Bradley, but you'd prefer it as a whole package.
I think it has to.
And talking about some of the other things.
I don't think it can be looked at in isolation, Nadia. It has to be considered as part of a whole range of strategies. As I said earlier, the alcoholic who is addicted just doesn't change their behaviour because of price. There's a whole range of other addiction factors that have got to be addressed and intervened. And it does require the Department of Health, it does require community services to have proper targeted registers of individuals who need support to remove them from communities where they're causing domestic violence. There's no question about that.
And health groups absolutely support a comprehensive approach. This is something we talk about all the time. So we would like to see a minimum price implemented in WA alongside a whole package of approaches, some of it which WA is already leading in terms of public education on alcohol harms. Western Australia is absolutely a national leader in that area. We can't just do one thing. We have to look at all the factors involved, but that doesn't mean that, you know, we should ignore price, because price is such a significant factor in when you're talking about harms from alcohol. So let's look at minimum pricing and absolutely recognise that we need a comprehensive approach, and that includes appropriate funding for treatment services, for heavy drinkers who might be looking to reduce their drinking or be particularly impacted by this. They need all the appropriate supports available, and you know, we absolutely understand that.
And we'd agree with that, Nadia. There's too much of public funding that's gone into the research side of alcohol, that's gone to the research institutes, that's looking at the same issues again and again and again over decades, as opposed to the frontline workers who need it the most to intervene and actually support people. So we would be saying, let's shift some of that public health funding away from the theoretical research that's funding the hundreds and hundreds of researchers in the background, and let's move it to the frontline services to try and intervene and support those people who need it most.
Julia Stafford and Bradley Woods, really appreciate coming in this morning. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Nadia.
Focus Perth with Nadia Mitsopoulos on ABC Radio Perth.